So it seems like I should start with a joke. It just seems the feeling of the morning, and it's a very old joke, but it actually is applicable to this morning for reasons that will become clear. It's about the rabbi who has two contending parties in front of them, and one of them makes his case, and the rabbi goes, "You're right," and the other one makes his case, and the rabbi goes, "You're right, too." And his wife standing behind him says, "Well, they can't both be right," and he goes, "You're right, too." And that's what I felt this morning with Korach. One person said how Korach was terrible, that Korach challenged Moses' leadership. I thought, "You're right." Someone else made the case that it was good that he challenged Moses' leadership. I thought, "You're right." And I thought, "They can't both be right." And I thought to myself, "You're right, too." But actually, they can both be right in a certain way. Not so much about Korach, but in general. That is, the impulse to rebellion is both precious and important and dangerous and destructive. Judaism contains within it both impulses. There's a temptation to call it the liberal and the conservative impulse, but that gets us involved in personalities and parties, and so I want to stay away from that and call it the impulse to change and the impulse to conserve. And I want to explain both of them, elaborate them a little bit, and then apply them to Korach and to today. The impulse to conserve is perhaps the harder one to understand, unless it's something that's precious to you. Every congregation knows this. You'll get someone who will come into your office and say, "Rabbi, why don't we ever change the tune to Adon Olam? It's been 30 years, it's the same tune." So the rabbi goes to the cantor and says, "Could you try a new tune for Adon Olam?" Cantor tries a new tune. The next day, someone else is in the rabbi's office. He says, "30 years, Rabbi. The same tune I've been looking for 30 years, and all of a sudden you change it." If it's precious to you, you wish to conserve it, but also the impulse to conservation is a recognition that there's a delicate balance, not just to the world, but to human institutions, that things build up over years, over decades, over centuries, and when you change them, there is always the law of unintended consequences. You think, "Well, I'll just tinker with this." But everything is a system. And when you put pressure here, that goes out of whack. It's true with nations, it's true with institutions, it's true with families. Every change is a multiple risk. And so there is a bias against change that assumes that things grow organically over time, and that though they will never be perfect, because human beings are so radically imperfect, if the balance is fairly workable, then tampering with it involves all sorts of possibilities of disaster that you can't envision. One statement that is never, ever true is things can't get worse. They can always get worse. And the impulse to conserve is afraid that because things might seem bad, the fix will produce something worse. The opposite impulse is also very powerful, which is, you got to make this better. This is bad. This is intolerable. Then, after all, the ideology of progress assumes that human beings have it within them to create air conditioning. And that will make things better. Of course, the conservative impulse in the back is saying, "What about global warming?" But the point is that we have done things that make life better. Modern medicine makes life better. Imagine if, a few hundred years ago, humanity had decided, you know what? Stop with the medical treatments already. They're just making things worse. And so you have constantly, within societies and within human beings, this impulse to hang on and this impulse to improve, to conserve and to rebel. And then you come to someone like Korach. And Korach looks around and he thinks to himself, really? We're in the desert. Life is not great here. And this guy Moses is telling us what to do. And he's giving us all sorts of rules. And Korach comes out with what would be a beautiful and an understandable and an endorsable campaign slogan. He says, aren't all of the Israelites holy? Not just you, Moses, we're all a holy people. So how come you get to tell us what to do? Of course, as the rabbis note, there's only one problem with this, which is what Korach really means is, therefore I should get to tell us what to do. If he really meant everybody was holy, he wouldn't be proposing himself as a leader. But Korach is not proposing some dictatorship of the proletariat here. He doesn't want everybody to lead. He wants himself to lead. And therefore, you understand that behind Korach's rebellion is not the principle of goodness, but the demands of ego. Still, he taps into something very powerful. And throughout Jewish history, there has been this alternation between the claims of authority and the needs of improvement. But here, we come upon one of the hinges of history, one of the things upon which history pivots, and that's the difference between a rebellion and a revolution. A rebellion seeks to modify the existing structure. That is, we're still going to listen to God, but I, Korach, am going to be the leader instead of you, Moses. A revolution overthrows the structure in favor of something new and different. Sometimes rebellions become revolutions. That's what happened in America. It was a rebellion against the British that became a revolution against the British. First, we were just going to have taxation with representation, then we were going to throw the bums out. The opposite dynamic happens with children. Children claim they want revolution when what they really want is rebellion. I don't want to listen to any of your rules anymore. That's a revolution. But it's not really true. Because if you say to them, okay, you're on your own, they'll say, well, you can still feed me and put me up and send me to school and give me money. I just don't want to have to go to bed at 10 o'clock. So the revolution downscales to a rebellion. In Iran today, what we're seeing is a rebellion that didn't become a revolution, at least not yet. Although one can still hope. But in the Jewish tradition, both of these impulses are honored. And so again and again and again, you see people, movements, authorities, individuals who work rebellions against the system. The Hasidic movement, which we think of today as a traditional Jewish movement, was a rebellion. The Baal Shem Tov, who began Hasidism, was thought of as a rebel. The Jewish establishment cast him out. The Vilna Gaon, who was the greatest Jewish authority of his day, refused to meet with any Hasidic leader. One of them walked, the founder of the Lubavitch Hasidim, walked miles and miles and miles, Shneur Zalman, to meet with the Vilna Gaon, and the Vilna Gaon wouldn't open his door. Because even though the Hasidim saw it as a rebellion, the Vilna Gaon saw it as a revolution. The enfranchisement of women in the Jewish world, that after thousands of years, Jewish women too could become cantors and rabbis and witnesses. Some saw as a rebellion and some saw as a revolution. And you know that this same impulse doesn't only work in religions and in nations, but in each human heart. Who has not said to himself or herself, you know, I should just up and change my life. Leave behind all these obligations and these responsibilities. This is why, as a wise man once said, you should make no life decisions while on vacation. Because you lie there and you think, this is how I should be living. Don't know why I'm doing anything else. It's the impulse to revolution. But you know, inside of us are both impulses, and they are religious impulses. And you hear religious leaders enunciate them all the time. Some religious leaders will tell you, what do you need? You need peace of soul, calm. You need to be accepting of your life. It doesn't matter what you do, as long as you are accepting and you have peace. That's the impulse to accept and to conserve. And then along come the prophets and say, how dare you be accepting? Look at all the injustice in the world. Look at all the things you do you shouldn't be doing. Look at all the things you don't do that you should be doing. You should be dissatisfied and unhappy, and you should stay up at nights and don't be accepting. And when I hear that, you know what I think? You're right too. I think that rebellion is important. And I am suspicious when people have achieved a level of perfect peace. There was a book in the 1950s by a Reform rabbi named Joshua Lo Lieben that was a runaway bestseller, and it was called Peace of Mind. And I remember I read it in college, and it's a very engaging read, and it's a very interesting book. But when I finished it, I thought, I'm not sure that anybody should have peace of mind. Not the way that we think of it, as though nothing ruffles your calm composure. But on the other hand, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could move through the world untroubled by the trivia and the foolishness and the pettiness that disturbs our days and wrecks our nights? So where do we end up with all this? I end up with the beautiful saying of Rav Kook, that it is the task of the Jewish tradition to preserve the old and to sanctify the new. I think that that's what we should be doing. Not looking to change everything, because so much of what we have been given is so beautiful and so sacred. And after all, if you believe that there is an authority and a source and a creator beyond ourselves, then our power is small and limited, and much of what this world is ought to just be accepted with gratitude and with praise. But after all, at a certain point, God stopped creating. And according to our tradition, God stopped creating so that we could start. And you can't sanctify the new if you don't create the new. So sometimes, inside our lives, inside our societies, inside our tradition, we need rebellions and even, at times, revolutions. It isn't a function of changing what we can and accepting what we can't change. It's a function of understanding what needs to be changed and accepting what ought to be conserved. To conserve what we can, and to sanctify the changes that we need to make in this world. So remember, every revolution is dangerous. Those who promise you that after whatever revolution it is, things will be perfect are always liars. They're liars in the Soviet Union, they were liars in Iran, they were liars thousands of years ago, and the next person who promises, and there will be a next, he'll be a liar too. But the person who tells you everything is as it should be is lulling you into a false complacency and trying to quiet the dissatisfaction that enables us to progress. So, lechadesh et hayashan, to renew the old, to conserve it and make it better, and lechadesh et hachadash, and to sanctify the new. That is our task. That's what Korach failed to do. But it's okay, because Moses won. Shabbat shalom.